On Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA, it is WRTA Weekend. Doug Herendeen. Liesl Kaffhammer is with ARC Federal Credit Union, and the program is Money Matters. Liesl, welcome.
Thank you, Doug.
And today's program may seem very elementary, but it's for a good reason. We're doing some basics of certain accounts, and we're hoping that this is going beyond just the people that would normally listen to this show, because we do podcasts of each of these, and there's a specific audience that may want to hear this. And if you who are listening know, oh, well, I know all this, but you haven't been able to impart it to some people, who are we talking about?
This is specifically for teens and young adults. So if there's someone in your life that you know, and if you are listening to this and going, well, I didn't realize that, we're not trying to embarrass you or target you. But if you do have someone in your life that is, you know, getting into that, they have their first job or they're going to college and they need to get a better hold on how to manage money, this is a very, very good starting place, this conversation.
And you'd think that this is passed down from parents to kids, or they will presume that, they covered this in school. I don't have to explain it. My folks were explaining things like this to me when I was 8. Mm-hmm. And also, that's when they paid off their one credit card and said, you know what, paying down is not always a fun thing. How about paying off? And they did that, and it was an example to me. But they didn't give me all the details, because your kids ain't necessarily privy to all that. But just explain why things work, how things work, usually through allowances, but also by example of what you're doing as you're raising them.
Right. And kids can start absorbing the basic attitude that parents have towards managing money as young as 7 years old. So if they see how parents are, like, they're always stressed out about money, or they're always just spending and buying, and whatever that mentality is around money, kids start absorbing that around like 7, they found that young. So don't think that, oh, my kid's too young to understand, I'm not going to bother saying anything. Never really too early.
They pick it up. I know of one couple where they were very young when they got married. They were very young when they had their first kid. And back at that time, when I knew them, they were not exactly savers. They were they were deeply in debt. And if the kid picked up by 7, I guess what they picked up, because they went in the total opposite. They became absolutely thrifty about everything that they did. And their parents eventually came around to do the same thing. But the kid did it first in her life when she became an adult.
Yeah, well, and that's a great thing, too, if kids see that, oh, my gosh, my parents have struggled with money my whole life, and I don't want to be in that situation. That's great that that child was able to, you know, take that and kind of flip the script. But
whether the child was an influence on them or not, because by the time the child was in college, they had straightened out their act and they weren't spending that way anymore, because they realized they couldn't. But where do you want to start here?
So I think a great place to start is what types of bank accounts are out there and what should you be looking for when you're just getting started. Like checking accounts and savings accounts are our two main forms of bank accounts that everybody really needs and needs to understand. Checking accounts are just your everyday, my money comes in and it sits there for a little bit and I pay my bills out of it. And usually you have like a debit card connected to it, or you write checks. Some of us still write checks.
Some people I deal with expect a check.
Yeah. And we've had employers that say, we still want people to learn how to write checks, because if you work at a job where you're required to issue checks for payment, you need to know what should this check look like, or you're taking a check from someone as payment. Is it filled out correctly? Is something missing? Is even if you're looking for like fraud or something on a check, it could be completely innocent. I filled it out. I filled it out wrong. I didn't realize. But you need to just be aware of how a paper check works, because they do still exist and are still used.
Yeah, some people my own age are amazed that anybody is still dealing with them, because these were the people that were paying their bills on home computers as first adopters. Of course, a friend of mine who did that found out 1 month nothing went through.
Oh, dear.
I forget how the bill paying app worked, or whether it was through a bank or something else, but he paid all his bills and then started getting all these notices. Hey, you owe us more money now because you didn't pay your bill. And the service that he was using apparently had a glitch, and thousands of customers ended up not paying their bills that month, and the service is no longer around. he wasn't doing it through his bank. I don't know how this was done at the time. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's a paper check does not hurt to know, despite mm-hmm. the fact some people will make fun of you for having them. Mm-hmm. I still use them. Like I said, some people expect them.
And it's usually good when you first get that checking account to at least order a pack of checks. Some financial institutions will provide some checks to get you started. It just depends on where you're banking. I know that one of the things that I learned from my mom, and I appreciate having this habit, is any checks that I write, I always get a book of checks that have a carbon copy under them.
Oh,
so
okay.
When you write the check out, there's always that copy of what it was because you tear it away, you give it to someone. If they don't cash it and there's not a digital copy of it scanned in somewhere, you might be thinking, oh, shoot, how much was that for? Or if it clears for a different amount than you have recorded,
yeah.
You know, you kind of think, oh, what happened? And systems are imperfect. It has happened, you know,
sure.
And if you can say, no, look, this is what I wrote it for, and I have the carbon copy, then there's always a way to kind of go back.
You know, it's interesting. I had forgotten carbon checks existed for a while at a bank I had. They were providing them free to try to get you to use them. And what I was always taught by my parents was use a check register.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, even if you do the carbon, you should be using a check register. Otherwise, how do you know how much you still have left?
Right. Yes. It's not a don't keep track because you have a carbon copy of your check. It is a backup in case, you know, you're off in your balances and you're like, man, I don't remember, or did I write this amount down wrong? Or you always have that to go back to.
We're going to talk about an online component later, but do most institutions now provide images of the checks as opposed to mailing them back to you, which we always used to. Now what do I do with these? And you keep them for a certain time, mm-hmm. and some people probably just threw them in the general trash as opposed to destroying them, which is not a good idea.
I would say that everyone that I'm aware of provides digital check images now through your online banking.
So you can see what you wrote, and you mm-hmm. can see when it was cashed.
Right. I would be surprised if you did not find a financial institution that did that, but I'm not going to say they don't exist because there are a lot of smaller institutions out there that are just, it's expensive to upgrade those systems. So it takes time. Always verify what's available when you go to open an account at a financial institution because I love to promote the local and community credit unions and banks because they have that personal touch, but you do need to be aware of if they don't have certain services available because of the expense of upgrading or implementing those, you have to be aware.
So we're talking a basic checking account, is there, and basic savings. Mm-hmm. What's the difference? I mean, you sort of said, well, you keep the amount of money you're going to be paying out to people in checking and in savings. That can be any number of ways that you use the savings account, right?
Right. You can look at short-term savings goals. You can look at a cushion in case something happens and you overspend from your checking. Some places will connect your checking and savings.
So you don't get an overdraft fee.
Right. ARC does that by default. Some places you have to request it or you have to set up like an overdraft.
Well, account. That's convenient compared to, oh, I've gotten a nasty surprise this month.
Right, right.
I don't know why they don't all do it automatically.
I don't know either. My first account was at ARC when I first started working, so my understanding of it was your savings automatically covers if something's not in your checking. I thought that's just how they all worked when I first started learning how to bank.
And the whole world does not work that way, so ask.
No, it does not. Right, exactly. Because you go to a bank and you just open a checking, and that's it. They say, okay, here's your checking account information. If you want a savings, sometimes you have a completely separate. I mean, they're not the same numbers. They're not connected in any way. So you have to make sure if you want something connected for overdraft purposes that you set that up. If you want a savings that does not overdraft, that you're like, hey, I'm saving to put a down payment on a car. I don't want to accidentally take money out of this because I didn't budget right. Mm. So you want to make sure you know how you're setting up those accounts and if they're connected in any way. That's an important question to ask. The people
now,
who are setting up
if somebody
accounts.
Comes to ARC, you can disconnect the two, right?
Your regular savings does not disconnect from your checking. We have other savings options.
Okay. So in that case, mm-hmm. ask and then do the other savings option. What would some of the other savings options be? Some people used to call, we've talked about them before, Christmas clubs or something like that.
Right. Yep. Christmas clubs are one. They're pretty common. Vacation clubs, which function the same way, but allow you to have different buckets for your savings. And there's a super share, which is an additional third. That way you can kind of split your savings up. If you're saving for vacation and you're saving for Christmas and then you're saving for another third, that car down payment, mm-hmm. you can have all those separate accounts that you're tracking. There's no minimum balance requirements on those accounts. There's not you can only withdraw out of them, you know, once a month or once a year. I had an account somewhere before where the Christmas Club, if you withdrew out of that account, there was a penalty. There was like a $10 penalty.
Substantial penalty for early withdrawal is what right. I've heard in a lot of the advertising. 10 is not as substantial as you only had 10 in it.
Right. But. And if you're taking out of it every other month, then because we would have people that would get a direct deposit and part of their money goes into their Christmas, part into their checking. And they think, oh, I need more. I'm just going to take it out of my Christmas. There's an extra $10 every time you do that. Mm. What would happen is on right before Black Friday, I think all the money in your Christmas club just auto transferred to your checking so you could spend it the holiday season. If you can wait, then you don't get any of the fees. But if something happens and you want access to that money, there's fees. So understand how the accounts you're using are set up. Ask questions. That's the most important thing. Ask questions because we work at the financial institutions every day. We should understand these services inside and out. And so don't think that we're going to look at you like you're stupid because you ask a question, like that you don't know what you don't
know. Especially if you haven't used the service before.
Right.
Yeah. And look at it this way. Partially, the idea is they want to incentivize you and other financial institutions, to save the money. They want to make sure that you, if you're going to get it out for a reason, hopefully it's not frivolous. If you really need it, you can get it. If you're putting it in there, also, the financial institution is using that money while it's there. They want to encourage you to leave it in until you absolutely need it when Christmas or the vacation comes mm-hmm. around. So it helps you. It helps them.
Right. And while your money is in a savings account, you can also – it can earn interest. It can earn a little bit of money just for sitting there, which interest rates aren't fantastic right now. But checking accounts usually don't have interest rates. Some financial institutions offer that. Our checking accounts don't have interest rates, but we also don't charge any fees for just, oh, well, you don't have an e-statement, so we're charging you a fee to get your paper statement mail. We don't have those kinds of fees associated like some financial institutions do. So
it's WRTA Weekend. Doug Herendeen, Liesl Kapphammer is with ARC Federal Credit Union. This is Money Matters. We're talking about different types of bank accounts and just the basics of it as an overview for maybe a lot of people that you may know this well and good, but maybe there's some people you could send the link for the podcast to that could learn some of this stuff. We wanted to get to the next segment here, which is sort of like managing your bank accounts like a pro. You've touched on some of the things in this, but what's the basics here?
So important things to remember when you are managing that account once it's all set up. We highly recommend setting up a direct deposit. That is something that will make sure you always have funds going into your account as long as you're employed and your employer offers that direct deposit option. And you want to, I know not everyone has a salary, right? You may not make the exact same amount every month or every week, every payday. Mm-hmm. But at least when you know there's something going in on a regular basis, you know that, hey, oh, my funds are getting low, but payday's coming and it's going to be right there as soon as we have that first morning posting. It's usually around, I say it's usually in the account by at the latest 8 a.m., but oftentimes it posts earlier, even though our branch may not be open that early. One of our branches opens at 9, another one opens at 8 a.m. on Fridays.
Yeah.
It just depends.
I'm just astounded that somebody would not use direct deposit. Now, where I worked at one time, they charged you $1 per paycheck because the bank charged them that.
Okay.
It was still worth it. I mean, think about it. Think what you save in time and gas and just getting it in, and you don't have to worry about getting to the bank on time, taking care of other errands. It's there.
Right. Yeah.
I don't have that situation where I am now, thankfully. Yeah. But direct deposit was just, I remember when it was a new thing, and I can't imagine somebody not using it today. If it's offered to you, if your employer will do it, why not?
Right. And I think the probably the modern version of having to pay for direct deposit is now having to pay for early deposit. Some financial institutions, fintechs, I think, are really the ones that are on that now. But you're seeing it more in banks and credit unions, that you would have 1 to 2 day early access to those payroll funds. So if you get paid on Friday, you might be able to actually make the withdrawal on Thursday, maybe even Wednesday, depending on what's available.
Well, that's sort of like a payday loan, isn't it?
Kind of, yes.
Yeah. So obviously that would cost the bank. So, yeah, I can see a fee for that.
And it, like I said, depending on the financial institution, the fees would be different. It might be a percentage. It might be a flat rate. But that would probably be the modern day equivalent of whenever they first started direct deposit, because there's a fee for the institution to process that. There's a risk involved. Whenever we see, hey, this is the amount that's supposed to be coming through for this person in 2 days, and we make it available, just because it hasn't hit yet, something could go wrong, right?
It's a loan.
In between. So, yeah, there's a risk there.
All right. So you set up direct deposit. What else? I think the next thing that you had on the list, and by the way, this is on the ARC site here, tracking your spending.
Yes. And that's the biggest one and the one that people struggle with the most. And I'm not going to fault anyone for struggling with this, because sometimes tracking your spending gets very complicated, especially when you're scheduling automatic payments or you have a subscription that comes out. Or if you have more than one person on your account, you get a husband and wife and they each have a debit card and they're each using it, and one doesn't know what the other used theirs for.
Yeah, if your streaming service suddenly bills you for the entire year, wait, I forgot that was coming due. So there's 68 bucks gone.
Right. So keeping track of your spending can get complicated, but because of mobile and online options now, you have the option to access that account activity multiple times a day. So as long as you log in and see what's going on with your account and everything looks like, hey, this is stuff that I did, this should be coming out. And I know people that are my age and younger, I mean, millennials, Gen Z, everybody is to the point where they're like, oh, ledgers. I don't want to keep a ledger, right? That's the registers for their checkbooks. But it is the most tried and true method. And it doesn't have to be a paper ledger. There are electronic versions of this. There are apps that include it.
You've talked about some of those on this program before.
Mm-hmm, yes. And there are a lot of apps that are just money management tools that kind of include that ledger in them. But overall money management that is very helpful, especially if you just want it on your phone in your hand all the time. Every Dollar, Empower, those are some that you can look into. But the tracking what you're spending really is the most important step, because we say about, you need to build a budget. You can't build a budget if you don't know what you're spending.
Well, true. And Dave Ramsey says that less than 5% of the people that even listen to him that are trying to do the right thing keep a paper budget.
Right.
And like I told you, my idea was, okay, I make this much, spend this much less than whatever that is.
Right.
And which is not really as good as Dave Ramsey's idea of writing it all down. My mother had ledgers that she kept for everything, and I've been meaning to start that up, especially since I bought the house, because I've saved everything on it, so I should be able to budget that out.
And don't feel overwhelmed by, oh, I forgot to write this down. Now the whole recording thing is ruined. I mean, why keep track of anything? I missed, last week. I didn't write anything down. It doesn't have to be perfect. What's that saying? Like, don't let perfect be the enemy of good, or whatever the phrase is. As long as you're working towards it. If you have to go back and, oh, I missed some stuff, let's try and catch up or restart from this point. Keep working towards it.
Avoid overdraft fees. Well, you sort of talked about that before.
Yes. And having a savings account that can cover some things helps with that. And making sure that you're tracking what you're spending helps with that. Having a direct deposit that goes in there on a regular basis to keep building that balance in your account up helps with that.
Explain what you mean by having the savings account linked to checking. It seems self-explanatory, but to people who haven't done it before, maybe they don't get that.
And if you don't have a financial institution that does that by default, it can also seem like, what do you mean? So a savings account that, and it may not be called a savings account too at your financial institution if it functions for overdraft purposes. So we have our savings are linked to, our base savings are linked to our checking accounts. If you spend more than what is in your checking, but you do have funds in your savings available, we will pull that, move it over to checking, and pay out whatever's coming through. If you do not have the funds in your savings account, then obviously that's a different situation. But we also have options for overdraft line of credit, which is not, it's not the same as getting that overdraft fee, but it is still a type of loan. So you have to be approved. You have to go through the loan application process. But some other financial institutions may look at what you are looking for as an overdraft line of credit. I don't recommend looking at that initially, because what you want to do is have the money in your account to cover things so you're not looking to borrow. But usually in those scenarios, it's cheaper to at least have the interest rate on whatever you've borrowed and then you pay it off the same month as opposed to those overdraft fees, because those can really add up.
Yeah, I've seen people get nailed with something for $24 or more, and they don't understand what it is. It's like, well, you overdrew your account. And I know this is an old joke, and the first time I heard somebody say it in real life, I thought they were making a joke. Well, I can't be overdrawn. I have more checks. And I thought, oh, you can't be that naive about it. They were.
Oh, dear.
I mean, so this is,
yes,
this will prevent you from having a huge problem if you don't understand that.
On a, I guess, a more modern version of that kind of take on things is the debit card. Why does my debit card still work? If I don't have money in my account, why does my debit card still work?
Oh, right.
And there are scenarios where if you have overdraft protection or courtesy pay protection, whatever you want to call it, on whatever financial institution you're working with, on your account, then you have basically authorized the financial institution to say, okay, yes, if something comes through and I don't have the money in checking or savings, yes, take my account negative and yes, charge me a fee, because let's say it's your electric bill or your water bill that's coming through and it has to be paid because you need to pay your utility bills or you, whatever it is. You're like, okay, take the account negative. I'll pay the fee for the convenience of having this done this time. Or you're
stranded. For bailing you out.
Right. You're stranded somewhere and you need to get gas and all of a sudden your card doesn't work. Your situation there is, okay, I'm willing to let this go negative and pay the fee in case something happens in an emergency. But you don't want that to be your everyday, oh, well, 2 days till payday, I'll just go negative. That's a bad habit. You don't want to rely on paying those fees on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So, yes, just because your debit card works doesn't necessarily mean you have the funds available.
We'll finish this up next month, but I will remind you there are podcasts of all these programs at WRTA.com and at the ARC site as well. First off, where are the brick and mortars?
We are at 1919 7th Avenue in Altoona and 419 North 7th Street in Juniata.
And to get a hold of you or somebody else, the phone number is?
814-946-0857. You can call or text.
And the website is?
arcfcu.org.
And we'll have that information as well with links to that on the WRTA podcast of this program. Mm-hmm. And also you can follow it through ARC. Liesl Kapphammer, thanks very much.
Thank you, Doug.
Up next, Arts Altoona and the first Altoona Real Film Festival.